Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. My name is Rick Vanover and this is episode 128, Azure 101. Today, my guest is Brad Sams. How you doing, Brad?
I'm great. How are you doing, Rick?
Hey, I'm doing great considering I'm really hoping this recording works after this little debacle I started out with. So, Brad, you and I actually, you go back even before I was at Veeam. Why don't you take a moment and introduce everybody, your background, and then more relevant on your current role and some of the publications you crank out.
Yeah, so I've known Rick for many, many years. We always try to calculate, and all I remember is we went to a couple events many years ago. But I've been writing in the tech industry for well over 10 years now. I started in the consumer world, slowly kind of over the years have transitioned to the enterprise side. So I run Petri.com, which is an enterprise IT news site, and I'm also the executive editor for Throt.com, which is our consumer channel. And I've been primarily focused on Microsoft. I kind of got started by accident, really just kind of out of fun, and then I got good at it, but then people were like, hey, we'll actually pay you to do this, and I realized you could actually make money on the internet doing this stuff. And 10 years later, I'm still doing it and having a lot of fun along the way.
Yeah, so I met you back when you kind of had like a news beat type of angle for another publication, and I was just amazed by the traffic and the views and the interaction you would get on some of that content. And actually, Brad and I both are from Cincinnati, Ohio. Listeners know that I live in Columbus, Ohio now, but Brad has basically a standing invitation to a really good free breakfast anytime he's in Columbus.
And I was thinking about that right before this call. I was like, man, those breakfast potatoes, I still haven't had anything as good as that.
Awesome. Well, anytime you're up in the 614, it's on me. Awesome. So, I really hope this recording works, but one thing we were talking about, Brad and I, was really Azure and the state of the market. I mean, I know that at Veeam, we talk a lot about Azure, and any organization really should be thinking about the public cloud in some way. And I mean, I'd probably agree it's a two-cloud world, but one of them, actually both of them, are really big. And, just kind of open-ended on the strategy and where they're going, Brad, what kind of things do you see about Azure that you like right now?
Yeah, so Azure is one of those things, unlike Amazon, Amazon was very much, I think a lot of people will agree, it was a happy accident, right? They had excess capacity, they started selling it off. And obviously that worked out exceptionally well for them. Microsoft was much more deliberate in their attempts to build out Azure. Many people know that Satya Nadella helped found that. He wasn't the only founder of Azure, but he was one of the driving forces behind it. And so what we're seeing with Azure, one of their most recent announcements is CosmosDB, which is this kind of geo-replicated, real-time sync, absolutely insanely easy to build an application that runs in the United States and get extremely SLA-backed low latency anywhere in the world. And so they announced that at Build, and they just kind of came out and said, hey, we've got this geo-replication databases with really small SLA-backed latency, and they just kind of glossed over it. I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And then they said, oh, you want to know more about that? I'm like, guys, this is huge, because for companies that are – if you're a new company, I think the cloud makes all the sense in the world. But don't underestimate that the on-premises world is still massive. There is a massive amount of infrastructure that is on-premises. And people need to start kind of understanding and saying, okay, here's where we are today. We know where the world is going. And at some point, you're going to have to make that bridge. A lot of people call it hybrid IT. And you're either, I don't think for many large companies it makes full sense to say, okay, we're scrapping everything and we're going to go to Azure. I think that's a pretty insane move, because not only is the cost really high, the benefits are great, but they're not, the be-all, end-all solutions in the cloud. But where we're seeing Microsoft take Azure is they're trying to take the complexity out of managing a geo-replication-backed service for any company anywhere in the world and taking the pain out of that process. That's kind of been their marching orders for the past few years that kind of led up to CosmosDB, and I continue to see them doing that. We're seeing them – they just announced Azure Container Instances, which is an extremely lightweight way to run a container without the need for VM infrastructure underneath. So if you want to fire up a container, you can use these Azure Container Instances. It's just all in there, no VM overhead, and they're billing by the second. for that kind of stuff. And so it's, again, that's them taking the complexity out of the new technology and trying to make it readily available to any size organization.
Whoa, a lot of things there, Azure. I almost called you Azure. A lot of things there, Brad. So the first thing is that Cosmos DB is indeed pretty cool. And, you know, what I like about it is that right at the page, and you know, this is right off a build. I don't know if this was available exactly at the same time, but they have a Cosmos DB emulator that you can run on premises. So this will run, it'll run on Windows or in a Docker container, which I think is actually really, really cool because it could get expensive to have a little science experiment in the cloud.
Sure.
So having this service emulated that way, I think that's pretty cool. And then on top of that, I think that what Azure and in particular Microsoft have is kind of an interesting advantage is the potential happy integration with so many existing apps and, you know, arguably the number one identity management for the workplace in the form of Active Directory. Mm-hmm. So they've got an incredible advantage there, I think, from the cloud opportunity perspective. And some of these new services that just come out, that's truly great. But there's an unfortunate consequence, is it makes the on-premises Azure stack never get done because all these new services keep changing the requirements and the like for it. That's interesting. So any other things kind of catch your eye from the Azure side?
You just kind of hit at it a little bit. Azure Stack is a really interesting play from Microsoft, although there's more to the story than Azure Stack than Microsoft will tell you, because some of it went on behind the scenes. So Microsoft initially announced Azure Stack, and for those who aren't familiar, Microsoft looks at this as Edge Azure, right? This is Azure technologies that you can run in your local data center. When they initially announced Azure Stack, it was just going to be a software component that you could retrofit into your data center and then get some of the Azure technologies on premises. And then the vendors stepped in and they said, wait a minute. You know, we want to sell new hardware. And behind closed doors, they kind of retooled all this and they created Azure Stack compliant hardware, which now if you want Azure Stack stuff, you have to buy it as a hardware unit. You can no longer just go grab the software. But what this allows you to do is that if you're running on-premises and you want some of those Azure features, the replication, the ability to offload things into the cloud, this type of a service and software and hardware kind of merging here allows you to bridge, you know, hybrid IT again, bridge that world. And it's really Microsoft's Trojan horse at the end of the day, is that, okay, you know, we can get Azure into the local data center. And when those people are ready to go cloud, as long as they're building around Azure Stack, it's just moving the hardware or moving the software. There's no other retooling of the infrastructure. And that's one thing that Microsoft really has that AWS currently does not offer. I wouldn't be surprised to see if they do. But as of right now, Microsoft has the best, okay, here's where we are today. How do we migrate, you know, over the next 5 to 10 years to the cloud?
Yeah, what I worry about, though, is you know, some fragmentation on the other end. You see a lot of OpenStack clouds,
yep,
which have some Amazon supported services like Swift, for example, is an S3 store, like S3 type of compatibility. So there might be some fragmentation that might go on that side. Again, that foothold in the business IT that Microsoft has is a real advantage. And on that list of what they call those integrated systems, there's only three. And they're names that we all know, but that really, well, there's two sides of that. One is it makes it hard to try. Okay, you can't just make a virtual machine in your data center and try Azure Stack. That's not how it's going to work. So you almost have to be serious to try this. But number two is it really enforces the model, right? Because one of my favorite blogger, Twitterati type, Alexander, Dutch guy, Van Der Kean, I think is his last name. He loves to say that the cloud is not a location, it's a model.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think that's a real fundamental thing because he was given a presentation on Azure Stack and he really reiterated that. So you got to take the model seriously of, even with the hardware dependencies, completely abstracted, because things are going to come and go. And, you know, most of us as practitioning IT people really don't have our heads around what happens when new devices arrive into the cloud. It's just automatically born and is now part of the cloud. Or if something has failed beyond repair, then it's removed and it's all seamless. Those are things that are characteristics that are new for, like, you know, traditional IT people. But whether it be the edge like that or, you know, fully in Azure, there's no doubt that this model, this cloud model, is going to be successful, and you're seeing undeniable opportunities for things like highly available, low latency databases. You're seeing things like platforms, the databases, that apps can be built around. And when we see these new apps come into play, that's going to kick the migration and the innovation into gear, because all it takes is one business service that's as popular as Netflix that every business wants to come into play, and that'll make the cloud happen. I mean, you could make the case with email and Office 365, but something's going to come and change where it's like, okay, I got to run my business and there's no better way. There's no practical way to do it except that way.
Yep.
Then the shift will really happen.
Yeah. One of the, and not to be a Debbie Downer at the moment, but one thing to keep in mind with Azure, and somebody else brought this up in a security related session that I was at. You got to remember though, that when you put everything into Azure, is it fully possible to ever truly divest yourself from the cloud, right? You can go up there and say, okay, I'm shutting down all these VMs, everything's gone, but you never really truly know if it's gone. Microsoft says it's gone, and you know how they have all these ISO certifications, and they say it's gone. But just kind of remember that, that when you go into the cloud, you're going into, as you called it, the public cloud, right?
Mm-hmm.
You believe you have control over it, but at the end of the day, you truly don't have full control when you go to leave that scenario. But that's just kind of one of those caveats that you just kind of got to play around with if that's a concern to you.
That's a critical observation. And the podcast isn't really about Veeam, but this is something we've thought about at length. And when we look at that, we take the approach of it's your data and you need to have control over it.
Right.
Okay. Now, we can't guarantee absolute control on the other end of it, but that's been the guiding principle of one thing we've done, where we allow organizations to move their data out of the cloud. Not necessarily to migrate out of the cloud, but I want to run in the cloud. I want to keep my backups here.
Yep.
I want to run Office 365, but I want my backups here. And on top of that, I can manage my own retention, which is an interesting angle too. Things like retain data forever. People with email, for example, they need, some people need those types of requirements. That sometimes is a barrier to going to a SaaS offering. So the Veeam angle has always been to give people that control of the data. And sure, data is going to move to, from, within clouds, but that control of running that IT service is always the burden of the organization. So having to control the data is one thing we've taken very seriously. And, you know, that's inspiration for everything we do in the cloud. But I think that organizations do need to be aware of that. It becomes this delicate balance between manage and control. Like, you can manage your cloud offerings, but you really can't control its availability. You really can't control what happens at the infrastructure level with your data. So that's a very, very valid point.
Yeah, and not to – I know we aren't talking about Veeam stuff and – put in whatever your favorite public backup software is.
I got one.
But one of the things, too, that we hear is people say, you know what, I'm in the cloud. I don't need to worry about backing everything up because Microsoft is promising that, you know, if I buy an instance or protection or whatever, my data's fine. And I absolutely do not buy into that theory. We all know very well the 3-2-1 rule about keeping data. At the very minimum, you're going to want to have control at some point along the way over the hardware and software of where your backups are stored. Because, well, granted, while Azure does give you, you know, 99% and 5.9 uptime is what they want, Azure does go down. We saw it last year. We've seen things where data gets corrupted, and Microsoft is very good about doing that. But you don't. The most frustrating thing we can hear from is that something happens, you know, whatever scenario happens, and you can't get to your data. And management is screaming down your throat saying, hey, why can't you do this? And all you can do is pick up the phone, call Microsoft, and sit there and twiddle your thumbs. And so having a backup would at least allow you to get to that data if Microsoft is taking, you know, if they're down for 8 hours and you have a client proposal due in 4 hours, being able to at least get a copy or something, even if it's, you know, a few hours old or a day old, being able to get to that can be the difference between landing a business or whatever, because you don't want to call up a client and say, hey, no, our proposal is going to be late, Azure's down, and we can't operate.
Oh, I agree. And the other side of it is, you know, I don't think the cloud will reduce any complexity, but what I think we will also see are things like automation errors or database administrator errors, application administrator errors. And I'll give you a real specific option is like maybe the app administrator, who's not a database person, ran a script that called something really bad on a database. Now, from the cloud perspective, it's all still online. But maybe data was changed, removed, deleted, et cetera. That's a real problem, right? So there's nothing but evidence that bad things will happen to good data, and that's the business I'm in. And what I'm going to see over time is that organizations will definitely choose the ultimate availability experience, which might be running on a platform like the cloud, might be having backup and then DR of within to another cloud, or you know, that those rules don't change whether or not it's someone else's computer.
Yeah, it's and the reason why I brought that scenario up was that wasn't some mythical thing that actually happened to somebody when I was giving a presentation about Azure and just Microsoft Enterprise News in general. And they said, look, this is what happened. Remember when stuff went down in December? We had a December 30th lock-in date for a proposal, which means we had to do it by the 15th. And we couldn't access our content online because Azure was offline in our specific region, and we had no backup on-prem or even on a different service like AWS or whatever.
Great.
And they couldn't get to that content, and the guy was literally just sitting there going, I'm waiting for Microsoft to come back online. And I think Microsoft was down in some regions for up to 12 hours.
Yeah, I remember that. That was pretty significant. And, in fact, even at Veeam, we launched a recovery technology to take backups and recover them into Azure. And I want to say it was in May or June. In Australia, there was a issue with something. So it's like my guy on my team who's in Australia used that region, and he thought it was our product that was working, but there was actually an isolated outage to a region there. So it's like then there's the whole like, what do we have where, and cloud creep and cloud workloads getting out of control and forgotten about. That's a whole nother problem. But knowing those regions and isolations and then any interconnectedness is really kind of like the problem of multiple data centers today. And then if you think about the hybrid approach, then it's honestly an incredible multiplier. So there's an incredible like advantage to the cloud, and then an opportunity to use these new services. But the core IT responsibilities of knowing what's where, troubleshooting, keeping it available, stewarding and keeping your data retained for the rules that you have, those actually don't go away no matter what you're doing in the cloud.
And I'm sure you hear this all the time, Rick. IT pros from around the globe are saying, you know what is my career path? And the one thing I always tell them is, hey, you can never go wrong with investing in yourself in security, right? Security is never going to go out of fashion. But really what's happening to the IT pro world is things are just evolving, right? To your exact scenario, right? It used to be on-premises and you had all this work keeping your on-premises data replicated and backed up. That does not change just because you have cloud. Really what the cloud should allow you to do in theory is potentially have more free time to invest in, say, either updating your line of business applications or working inside your own environment. But the cloud is not a babysitter at the end of the day. It's just, to your point, it's a model of where you can run the stuff. In theory, it should have better redundancy and better uptime and should give you more flexibility that allows you to invest that time elsewhere. Because if you're just sitting there saying, okay, I now have, let's just make something up, 10 extra hours per week, you can't sit idle as in any career. If you have that much time, invest in learning about security. Invest in learning about how to properly data replicate in the cloud and on-prem. So when those type of scenarios happen, you know, downtime affects all of us. And it's not a win. It's not an if. It's a win, right? It's going to happen to you regardless of what your preparations are. And it's how you react to that is what's the difference between, right, grade A and grade F.
Well, and I think a really good practical recommendation is troubleshooting in the cloud. I mean, troubleshooting is an exercise that nobody really wants to do, But let me tell the full story. We actually advise a lot of people in our roles here at Veeam on how to get a really good DR experience, right? Mm-hmm. And that historically has been very much focused on premises. But one of the exercises you can do with DR is some sabotage. That's where it gets fun. Basically, let me give you an example. Imagine you're going to perform a disaster recovery. And this is actually very much an application-specific conversation or exercise. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that if you're doing a DR event, and let's just say it's a critical app that uses SharePoint or something like that, you can throw a curveball into that by like moving in an old version of the database or a newer version of the domain controller to make the application people like say, well, what the heck is going on, right? So the end result here is you actually walk away with really good troubleshooting skills. And that's like little tricks that have been done on premises for years where somebody managing the DR, which is not managing the app, they're working together, but as an exercise, there's a little bit of sabotage involved. Those types of things in the cloud for cloud native apps and troubleshooting, you know, like little things like, well, it works on this network, but not, it works at home, but not in the office. And, mm-hmm. you know, put in a quota on a database and see if it tips over and breaks it. Those types of things can be really helpful on test environments would be a good qualifier. But those types of things would be really helpful to kind of sharpen that cloud troubleshooting, because that can be a really difficult process. You know, when it's like, okay, it works, and then it's actually a new version of these very fragile applications that nobody knows how to touch. But then you can't even turn it off because it's up there. It's even scarier in a way. Yeah. So Brad, you know, any books you're working on? I know you write a lot. Rattle off some links for the listeners here so they know where to find you on the internet.
I do write quite a bit. So you can just find me, you know, enterprise-related content. You're definitely going to find it at petri.com, P-E-T-R-I.com. It's probably the best place to go. We got a lot of good, just really enterprise content, everything from, like, how-tos to just what's happening within the industry. Quite a few Microsoft MVPs writing for us over there, and you know, it's just those guys are crazy smart, and they write some really technical stuff that I try to read and understand, I'll pretend. And then I write up the new side, the strategy stuff, what's going on with Microsoft, the new servicing models and all that good stuff. And so,
and then your podcast with Paul, the one that is so easy to record. Tell me where we can find that one.
You can find that over at therot.com. It's called First Ring Daily. As the name suggests, we do it every single day, and on Friday we even go crazy and do it live.
And we did do one live at VeeamON, I remember. That's actually I don't remember if you had like someone on standing on camera or like a little table situation, but I know that when I do podcasts, those are a heck of a lot easier because it's just a device that records, and it honestly sounds kind of cool with that air and the echo and the occasional background noise.
And that nice little background noise of almost like, I call it airport noise. Hustle and bustle behind the scenes.
I love doing that. But anyways, I'll be sure to link all of that into the podcast notes. And really just a quick chat here, Brad on Azure. And you can find Brad on Twitter at BDSams. That's Brad Sams, nice and short on the Twitter names there. And I'll put links to those different web identities. And Brad, thanks again for being on the podcast.
As always, let me know when it's live, and I'll give it a share across the networks.